You're listening to the Fairways People podcast, where we share inspiring stories, meaningful conversations, and the voices behind our charity. Each episode offers a closer look at the people and passion that drive us. Hosted by Fairways Managing Director, Gareth Webb.
Hello everyone, so welcome to another Fairways People podcast. I'm Gareth Webb, the Managing Director of Fairways. And for our podcast today, we have the one and only Brett Knowles. You right, Brett?
Yeah, thanks.
thanks for coming in today, Brett. So Brett's our Head of Residential Services, which is made up of our residential children's homes and our support living service. So I really appreciate you coming to speak to me today, Brett. I'm quite excited to get to know a little bit more about you, because sometimes you can be quite a closed book. So be interested. So I'll give a little brief introduction. So Brett, I believe you've been in the care sector, is it for around 20 years now?
Yeah, just over 20 now.
Okay, so. Brilliant. And you've been with Fairways for around 6.5 years.
Yeah.
I can't believe it's that long, actually.
I know, it's flown by.
In my head, I think, it's got to be about 3 or 4, but 6.5, that is a long time. So you joined as a registered manager. You come on board as a manager for one of our 5-bed children's homes.
Yeah.
And then since then, you've had a really good career, I believe, in Fairways over the last 6.5 years. And you've been really key in residential, actually, in terms of its success. So thank you for that. But you were promoted then from the children's home to a senior registered manager. And that's then overseeing 2 children's homes.
Yeah, that's right.
And then you progressed on to and was promoted to the head of residential in 2021. So for the last 4 years, roughly, you've been now overseeing all of our Ofsted registered children's homes in the south, and which caters for around 22 young people. And more recently, you're now also overseeing our registered supported living homes. So for young people 16 and over, with a supported accommodation, which is now Ofsted registered. And you cater for around 25 young people, I think?
Yes,
roughly.
Roughly.
Keeps growing.
There's a lot.
And you've got 5 direct reports, and there's got to be around 80 plus staff in your department. So
yeah,
that's quite big, actually, when you think about it.
When you break it down like that, it's a bit scary.
It's a bit scary, yeah. Okay, so like I said earlier, recently we've really looked at our strategy and we've defined our 3 core areas and services. We've got residential, education and family services. So residential is absolutely key, Fairways moving forward. And it offers some of the most essential services for young people in the care system. And we reach out to Hampshire, Bath and Bristol. But we'll talk a little bit more about that as we go through the podcast. Okay. So as with all my guests, I'd like to start from the beginning. So I'll shut up talking now. And you talk to me a little bit about your childhood and where you grew up, Brett.
This is the stuff I love talking about. So my childhood was, I think it was pretty normal. I think my dad was in the Navy. So I didn't see him a lot. My mum was a childminder at home, so I was quite used to having lots of children, other people's kids come around and be with us every day. I got into judo when I was about 8, I used to do that competitively up until I was about mid-20s. So I used to compete sort of internationally and all over the country. So I think from teenage years, I was training 5-6 times a week. So that took up a lot of my time.
So yeah.
Really structured. I really enjoyed the competitiveness
and
the winning side of it.
So
school was quite normal. I think when I got to the age of 15, I actually moved out from my mum and dad's house. I moved in with my gran after my granddad died. Pretty much stayed there until I was 18, 19, and then moved out into a flat with some mates. Play hard.
Party hard.
So I went to college and I started off in sports science. I was really into my fitness and everything there, and I got a job as working as a fitness instructor.
Right.
So I did that for about 5 years, but pay wasn't great. Especially down here, I think you needed to go back in the day, you needed to go to London or something like that to get anything decent. So I then joined Lloyd's TSB, as it was back at the time. Started off as a cashier, but worked my way through to being an account manager. Did that for about five years. So I did that and my fitness instructor at the same time. But I found it was very sales orientated. And it used to be quite a intense work atmosphere. It was, like, it was really sales driven. And if you didn't sell something, then they'd berate you in front of everyone. So that wasn't really for me. So from there, I then ended up in a children's home. My judo coach at the time ran a home, he had a vacancy guide, so I just kind of applied for it. Got the job and been there ever since.
Been there ever since. So just going back a little bit, that's really interesting. I didn't know some of that about your sort of childhood, and especially the competitive judo. That's really interesting. And then, so you moved out quite young, 15.
So I was always got along with parents, but really close to them. I think with my dad being away all the time, I didn't see much of him. My mum kind of did her own thing. I think I was very close with my gran and my granddad. I used to see them most weekends. And I think, when my granddad died, I went and lived with my gran and sort of supported her for a bit.
Oh, okay. And is that you local? You're from
Gosport.
Yeah. Okay. Nice. So you are Portsmouth, okay. And you've always, so did gran live over in Gosport area as well?
Yeah.
So all your family there?
Yeah, it's all quite close.
So assuming you're, and I could be wrong, but because your dad was in the Navy, is that why you're based in Gosport, was it? Or
So my mum always came from Gosport. My dad was Milton Keynes.
Oh, okay.
But he was based down in Salton, I think it was.
Okay.
Yeah.
What did he do in the Navy?
He was a submariner.
Oh, that's quite a tough job.
Yeah.
You are away a lot, aren't you? I know my oldest son, 26, his friend's a submariner. He's been in there for about 4 years now. He hates it. But he's off to Scotland all the time and training.
So he came out and then he went and he actually did a little bit in children's homes for a while. And then he went and started working on some oil rigs. So he was away like 6 weeks at a time. And I think he enjoyed being away from everyone.
We tend to find that when you've been in the Navy or something like that, because you're away a lot, then you tend to find jobs that that take you away a lot. But okay, so you fell into the childcare sector through, like you say, your judo coach, okay, and had a home, so you fell into. How did you find that? Because that's completely different from working in a bank and stuff like that. So
I think the first 6 months I hated it.
Okay.
I think because there was no structure and well, there was a structure, but it was not like being in a bank or having to run classes in a gym or anything like that. So there's lots of free time, and it took a while to adapt to it, but once I got into it, it was found it great. I think the kids do, because I had an interest in judo and going and doing it, the kids would just do it with you. It was really fun.
So you started off as a support worker. Talk me through a little bit about, because obviously 20 years in this sector.
So I moved up quite quickly. So I did support worker, I think within the year I was up to a senior.
Okay.
I did that for about a year and moved to a team leader. Probably within that year, I moved up to a deputy. And then I was a deputy for a few years in the home I was at. I had an opportunity then to go to registered manager at another home. So I moved across. Yeah. That home at the time was requirements improvement. So quite a bit of work to go in there and a bit of culture change needed. I think first job as manager, when people make mistakes.
Yeah.
I think I came in and I was like, very much do it my way. And obviously you can't build a team that way. But we managed to, first inspection, we turned it around to good. And then next one, we went to outstanding and maintained that for a while. It was a 4-bed teenage boys home. And part of, within the 3 years, we developed into a 6-bed. We built on 2 independent flats to the side of it. So yeah, so I was there for about 4 years. Then the opportunity to move back to my original home came.
Okay.
So that was an 8-bed younger home for some quite challenging kids. Moved back there, managed to get that to our standard, first attempt, and then we maintained that for a few years. We actually developed that home as well.
Okay.
We had a school on the side of it, but the school grew, and we, as an organisation, they found a local site and moved it off site.
Okay.
So we then built that home to be a 10-bed home.
Okay.
Which was a little bit mental, challenging. Yeah. but it was really fun as well. It was really busy, really challenging. Lots of people were getting burnt out all the time. Yeah. But younger kids, they need a lot of occupying and need engagement all the time.
So what sort of age range were they when you say younger?
So I'd say our youngest was 5. But generally they were about 7, 8 when they came in.
Wow, that's
up to about 14.
Obviously, I've been doing this a long, long time like you, and even when you say stuff like that, I just think a 5-year-old child in the care system and a children's home is just, like, again, it blows my mind. Imagine that.
That 5-year-old was the youngest one we've had, and he actually moved to us at Fairways.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, right, okay.
So he's just about, we're looking at a transition to a support accommodation for him.
Okay.
So he's been in the care system since 5.
Wow.
But seeing him develop over that time is amazing.
Yeah, positively.
Yeah.
Okay, so, Just coming off of that, there are some negative views out there all about, you know, should you have, you know, a 10-bed or 12-bed children's home? It's far too many children in one place. Surely you can't care and provide for them alone like you would if you had 3 or 4 in a home. But what's your views on that?
I think you can have larger homes, as long as you get the structure right and obviously the matching right. I think it can be really beneficial for some children, not all children.
Yeah.
I think sometimes the family environment works really well for children, and I think that's got to be the preference where it is.
Yeah.
But you get those children that have had such a bad time in those family environments. Sometimes group living is better for them.
Yeah.
They don't need to build those attachments, those family type attachments.
The pressure of that, I guess. Knowingly.
So
or not.
I've worked in I've run a lot of services from 4-bed homes up to 14-bed homes.
14. Wow.
Yeah. That was split over 2 homes, but it was all on one site. But I would say 6 is probably the nice round figure.
Yeah.
I think it gives you flexibility to be able to break the kids up in smaller groups and do things, but also you can bring them all together as well.
And what, I know the staff room ratios, but I guess for some people that aren't used to sort of children's homes or have this picture of Annie the film where you've got, you know, someone running the home and no staff and kids running riot, what are the staff room ratios or what in children's homes?
So I would say ours at Fairways are pretty good. You're probably looking at 1 staff to 2 kids.
Okay.
On there, but I think when some other companies, we don't have ratios as good as that. I think when I used to run the 8-bed home, you'd have 8 kids with 4 staff.
Oh, really? Okay.
And we saw a lot of burnout with that.
Yeah.
But I think it depends with ages. The younger children need a lot more presence and people around all the time, where the older ones, you can get away with dipping the ratio slightly because they have a bit more independent time or want to spend time alone. But
so 6 young people with 6 children at home, you'd have around five
staff.
So nearly 1-to-1 sort of ratio.
Yeah.
Okay. And what... I know you've worked for a few different services, and you've had a few different roles. But so, how did Fairways come about? What did?
So, Fairways came about from John, really. John Loney.
John Loney, director. Okay. Yeah, good old John. Yeah.
So when I was at Fairways, not Fairways, can't get it out of my head. When I was at Hillcrest at the time, he came out a few times and saw some of our services and just doing a bit of the peer network and stuff and got to know each other. My journey at Hillcrest went from being really good to they got bought out a few times by venture capitalists, and the whole culture and the ethos there, the values really changed. And I moved on to another organisation, which again looked really good on the outside, but when you got in, the values and everything didn't really match with everything. And I reached out to John at the time, saying if there was any opportunities come up, let me know, because I'm really keen to come across. And yeah, there was a manager vacancy at the time. So,
good. So, and you're right. There's a lot of providers out there, and I think sometimes like we don't realise how good we are, I guess, in fair ways, in terms of, you know, yes, we can always improve and we always look in to learn and we make mistakes and we learn from them. But in terms of values and passion, I think Fairways is pretty high up there, isn't it? Would you agree?
I would 100% agree. I think when I came across, I think because of my experience at Hillcrest and the way the whole culture changed and the way they treated people, and then the other organisation I joined, which was very brilliant, and the values there really didn't align. I think I was very mistrustful when I came over. We said we did all this stuff, and but actually my experiences hadn't been that great.
Understandably, I guess if you've experienced some bad cultures.
But actually, the longer I've been here, I think, the values are great. The support that's provided to people, I think we've got a lot of support here, which I think it's just being able to access and getting to know what is out there and using it. Yeah. I think where I came from, quite private organisations, it's very much you're left to do, get on and you do everything yourself. So it took me a while to
adjust to that,
actually use some of the other services. But it's brilliant, and I think we definitely do what we say we do.
Cool, good. So let's talk a little bit about your role now then. So you're the head of residential services. So what do you actually do? What's your role there, Brett? I know you do a lot, but what do you do?
So in a nutshell, I try to support the managers so that they can support their teams to provide the best care and support to the children we look after. Obviously, we've got 4 children's homes and a number of supported living homes. So they've all got their own cultures and characters in there, which they should have. But also try and make sure we've got that consistency across the organisation. And I think it all comes back to the children and the people that we're looking after, and making sure they can have the best outcomes and opportunities to move forwards. I think when you look at some of our homes, some of the outcomes some of the children are having are amazing. Look at Manor Farm, Garden House, some of the young people in supported living sort of moving on and stuff. I think we do a really good job.
So you I guess, you know, a lot of our young people in your homes, in children's homes and support living, have encountered a lot of trauma. So what do you find most challenging working with, you know, with children with trauma?
I think the children are probably the less challenging aspect. I think because they work with a lot of people, that transfers across, which is absolutely normal. And I think trying to manage that is where the challenges come in. I think because everyone's got their own experiences, and it can be really hard for the staff to be dealing with that day in, day out, all day, as well as if they've got stuff going on outside of staff work. So I think that's where the real challenge is.
So you mean like the trauma from the children being transferred to the staff, and then what that creates for them, the feelings, the behaviour, and the unconscious process we talk about sometimes, and what that causes. So what? So how do we, or how do you support staff to try and better work with trauma then?
I think we do it pretty well at Fairway. So I think we've got our training, you've got the RISE, we do DDP in children's homes, support living do the MBR. I think the key part is the supervisions and the reflective sessions they have with the hub. I think most of it is, and they do it very well, is the management teams, the structures they have in their homes and them having that time to sit down and speak to people. Yep. I think that's where the real...
Yeah, yeah. It's important in having that structure, that routine, that predictability, which creates safety for staff well as young people.
It's exactly the same for children as isn't it?
Yeah,
I think if they're uncontained and they don't have a routine or anything, they don't know what's going on. It's the same for adults. Like, if we don't know, or if there's been a massive change and our routine's thrown out, we go into chaos. It's just normal. So the more predictable we can make things, the better.
So we've got we've touched on like the children's home supported living, and I know we've we were a pilot for DfE, Department for Education, for a Staying Close, and then we were an approved provider. Do you mind just talking to me a little bit about Staying Close and what that entails?
Yeah, so that's probably more of a newer area for me. So we've got a very good Staying Close lead in Lauren now. She's doing really well. We're sort of picking it up and moving it forwards. So this is about for children and young people that have been in the care sector, been in children's homes and are supported living homes. It's about making sure they have contact and support in the local area for when they leave us. So at the present we offer outreach support to some of them, and we try and help them with preparing them for jobs, making sure they've got all the right information for benefits and things like that. I think it's definitely an area we're looking at developing. Okay. I think we can do a lot more than what we have done over the years, for various reasons, but I think it fits well within Fairways, and I think we'd like to try and expand the scope of it, so it's not just supported living but actually care leavers in general, so supporting foster care and anyone that leaves children homes and even education potentially.
So Staying Close, it's like, so it's for young people leaving the care system, I guess, when they're 18, and trying to intervene sooner and whilst they're with Fairways, and try and give them the skills to live independently and positively in the community, I guess. Is that sort of a split
of summary? That's right.
We talk a lot about the care cliff edge, which frustrates me every time I say the word, because I know there is such a lack of support. As much as there's some great charities and services out there for young people leaving the care system, there's still a lack of a wider support network to support young people who live in care. You know, when we speak about it, we know that 48% of the prison population are in the care system. We know, I think it's around 47, 46% of the homeless population are in the care system. You know, they often say that they're set up to fail at 18 when they leave the care sector. But what's your views around the care cliff edge, that terminology?
I think it's very real. I think it's becoming more and more apparent. I think with all the financial burden across the country, I think we're in a process now where a lot of the children are older, and I think there needs to be a massive focus on getting the support in place when they're really young, and making sure that's there. I think it's a difficult one.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because like I always think of my own children, like 26, 22 and 18, and I think, well, 26-year-old, yes, they're independent, but they still need support. And like these young people in care, you know, a lot of them have lost that family network. And for everything just to be cut off, you know, your children's services at 18 and all that support they had, it's just crazy, isn't it? And I think you wonder why there's these young people are set up to fail and end up in negative circumstances. But I know we're looking at a charity, aren't we, how we can do a lot more and stuff in the community going forward, which is quite exciting. But yeah, no, I agree. It's different. There needs to be a lot of change, but at a government and a high level as well as local change as well.
And a massive investment into the local services and things like that, which doesn't seem like it's moving that way at the moment, does it?
Definitely, definitely. Okay, well, thanks for sharing some of that, Brett. So I guess just a little bit about yourself, like what's your why? What gets you out of bed in the morning and keep you doing this, the role that you do?
What's my why? I would say it's probably about developing people now. I think when I got up, it was about the what direct work I could do with children,
yeah,
and sort of support them. But I think as I kind of moved up the scale, I realised I could reach a wider network of children by coaching and developing people around me,
yeah,
to reach more. So I think that's my why.
Yeah. Is
developing people and making sure that we can provide the best outcomes for the children.
Yeah, I like that. And actually, we're just thinking, reflecting on your journey, I think you're absolutely right. You put a lot of time and over the years into young people, and then probably in the last maybe 3 or 4, I've seen you're really invested in your staff. You've done like real high level coaching qualifications now. So yeah, I get that. And that's a really nice way of thinking about it. Actually, how can you reach more staff to coach them to then maybe deliver good outcomes to young people?
Yeah
I like that. That's good. So we talk a lot about our 5-year strategy and about our breakthrough objectives and our core services. But what's some of the key objectives you'd like to achieve for your department over the next few years? You know, personally, what are you looking to achieve?
I would like to expand both children's homes and supported living. I think there's such a need out there that we can reach out and support a lot more children and young people.
Yeah.
I think we do very good work in all our homes, so I'd like to get to a stage where we're all recognised as outstanding moving forwards. And I think just retainment and having the opportunities for staff to progress and really feel valued within the department as well.
Good, yeah. I like that. And you're absolutely right in terms of growth. You know, I know we've spoken that we've done a growth for the sake of it, but we know there's such a need for young people, of the need of children's homes and fostering. I checked them with our placements manager yesterday, just to look at our referral rate, and we are averaging over 200 referrals a day.
It's crazy.
For young people in care, it's just like, again, that just blows my mind. We know every 15 minutes a young person comes into care, but it just shows you, I guess, the crisis we're in terms of the childcare sector and the care system. It's crazy.
Yeah, and we're good at it, so why not help more if we can?
Absolutely. So we talk a lot about Fairways, about our values, about playing your part. So what, I've been saying this to everyone, if you were to stick a rock, I keep sounding like you used to get the seaside, I don't know if you still can, but you break it in half, what's the values for you, what's your core values that run through you, would you say?
I'd like to say trust, honesty and integrity.
Yep.
I think for me, a big one is, if you say you're going to do it, then you deliver on it. Trust, I think it's a two-way thing. I think I'd like to be able to trust the people I work with and hope they feel like they can trust me as well. And I think honesty has to happen. I think positive and negative, you need to be able to have those challenging conversations honestly to help people develop and sort out any issues as they come up.
Yeah,
I think it's nice. Always in best interest to do that.
Absolutely. Good. Okay. Last question. So, excuse me. A generic question I've been asking my guests is like, with all the complexities and the chaos of everyday life, we know it impacts on our own mental health and well-being. So my question is, you, what do you do for your own well-being, or what do you recommend? Or should you do more? Well, no, I should, but go on.
I'll say this year I probably haven't been as great at it. Okay. But I think for me it's about just getting out and doing stuff. I think I hate being stuck in at home or or anything. It could be walking the dog, or I do like going up to Wales or Scotland and doing the hikings up in the hills, or climbing, and it just clears your head or everything and refreshes you. I think, yes, that's
outdoors.
That's for me,
Good. Don't do any more judo these days?
No, not since I had a couple of serious injuries. I broke my neck.
Oh, Christ.
And then I snapped my Achilles, sort of all within 18 months. And I just.
That was it. That was tired. Do you miss it though?
Yeah, massively.
I bet, because if you've done it at that level for so long when you were younger,
So I've been toying with it over the last year or so, but it's just.
Maybe coach it. Probably be a good coach.
Yeah, maybe.
If you've got time.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Brett. I really appreciate that. Thanks for your time today. That's been really interesting. One, I didn't know he was a karate kid, a judo expert many years ago. And it's nice to learn a bit about sort of your what and your values. So thanks for coming in today, Brett.
That's been great. Thanks.
Appreciate your time. And thanks for everyone for listening. Thank you.